Hello, welcome everybody to episode one of the Rex Chat podcast, hosted by me, Ben Bulls. This is, like I said, episode one, and it's a pilot episode, so please don't expect it to be perfect. I'm sure there'll be a few little hiccups along the way, but we're going to do our absolute best. So today's guest is a friend of mine. We've been friends for a little while now. I've bought a few snakes off them in the past, and recently a couple of new racks as well. I've got around 3.5, I think 3.5, might be 6.5, hang on, 6,500 followers on Instagram, and they have been producing some amazing looking snakes in the last couple of years. So without any further ado, let's get them into the chat and start the pod. So, hello, Kay and Chris, how are we?
Good, Ben, how are you?
I'm honestly, I'm really nervous.
Same here.
That's good. I'm glad we're all on the same page. So, obviously, I know you guys, but other people listening might not. So, if you just want to introduce yourself, just your names, Instagram, and that'll do for now. And then we'll get to know you a little bit more in a second.
I'm Chris Thompson from Casey Wells.
Yeah, I'm Kay from KC Royals. It's KNC Royals, isn't it, on Instagram?
So all the links for the Instagrams will be in the description of YouTube and all the Spotify and Apple and stuff later on, once I work out how to do that. But yeah, it'll be around. So what I want to start with is a segment called Get to Know You Guys. Basically, it's going to be a few quick fire questions, not loads. And just a few short, snappy answers so I can get to know you a bit and the guys listening can get to know you as well. All right, so some of them will be about animals and some of them will just be about stuff. So let's get stuck in. So first exotic pet.
Cool python, I'm mine.
Yeah.
Cool python. The favourite species or favourite morph that you're currently keeping?
Mine's blackhead, 100%. The ball python, blackhead, yeah. Choices.
It's difficult, there's so many.
Leopard, ball python.
Okay, nice, nice. Right, so money, no object. What species or morph would you buy?
If I could, a green anaconda.
Nice.
He couldn't.
Okay. What about yourself?
I love boas, but yeah, no, I'd say a boa. Nice. Or a super dwarf free tick.
Okay, yeah, I like those. I know my friend has got one of those and it's a cool looking snake. Most overrated species or morph?
Oh.
Yeah.
I awed at this one a lot as well. I'm not sure what I'd pick myself.
Overrated.
That's a hard one. Morph.
Yep.
It's hard because I don't see any that are overrated. I'd say they're more underrated than overrated.
Okay. Oh, fair enough. What about species? If you say there was a species that was overrated, it's too much hype.
I'd say geckos, in my opinion.
Yeah, leopard geckos or just geckos in general?
The leopards.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, and so moving straight on, what about the most underrated morph or species?
The most underrated, I'd say, morph-wise with ball pythons. For me, it's pastel.
Yeah, okay, I would say that as well. I think it gets a lot of hate, pastel.
Yeah.
Mojave.
Yeah. I one of my favourites, Mojave. I think most of my collection's got Mojave in it.
It works with everything, Mojave.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Right, and now moving away from the animals for a couple. Again, really just quick fire. These are basically yes or no answers. So, beach or mountains?
Beach,
yeah.
Vacation or staycation?
Staycation.
Vacation.
Yeah. Sun or snow?
Sun.
Snow.
Night in or night out?
Night in.
Night in.
Yeah. And early bird, night out, or a bit of a permanently exhausted pigeon?
Permanently exhausted pigeon.
Yeah.
I know the feeling. I know the feeling. Right, that's the getting to know you questions done. So hopefully the viewers and I know a little bit more about you. If it's relevant or not, it doesn't really matter. It was a bit of fun just to break the ice. So let's get on to you guys, really. So let's start with what are you keeping and how long have you been keeping?
Well, at the present, we are only keeping ball pythons.
Yeah.
But we were keeping other species and a couple of bearded dragons.
Burmese pythons.
Yeah, but we decided to just concentrate on the ball pythons going forward.
Yeah, yeah. And how long have you been keeping for? Not necessarily, not royals, but just reptiles in general.
Well, I grew up around them when I was little. But personally, myself, actually owning one, we brought one for my daughter's 8th birthday. She's now, so that's
4 years.
About 4 years.
Oh, okay. Yep. I presume you're keeping royals, probably most royal keepers have got more than one. I actually know that you've got more than one, but how many are you keeping at the moment? Not exact numbers, but rough numbers.
Cut down, so I'd say we've got about 40.
Okay, and you cut down from how many?
I'd say about 80.
Okay, and what was the reason you guys were cutting down? Did you decide there was too many just to take care of, or do you want to focus a bit more on what you were doing? Get a bit out of hand.
Basically, more impulse buying. It was, oh, that looks nice, but not needing. And then it got to a point where it was like, we were managing, but I wanted to put more time in than what I was able to.
Yeah, I completely understand that. So you're fine. Although you were giving the animals the care, you wanted to be able to spend more time with the specific ones instead of going, oh, I've got 2 hours. I'll just smash through cleaning them. They're done. I haven't actually even looked at them.
Wanted to actually spend some time to, do you know what I mean, take some pictures and actually interact with the animals themselves. We weren't able to really do that once everything was done. It was like, okay, now we're exhausted.
Yeah, no, I
it was like, didn't really get to, but also now we're able to put more time into them, and I find that you have to know your animals, characteristics, because all of them are different. And for them to feel comfortable, you have to know what they like, and every single one of them like different.
Yeah, and they all react differently as well. And I found that out this morning. I was cleaning out a new pied albino boy that I've had for maybe a month. And I was cleaning the water out, took his bowl out, gave it a clean, put it back in, and he bit me. I had to get my wife to get the tweezers and take a couple of teeth out my hand. That was a good start to the day. So obviously, you've been keeping for roughly, you said, 4 to 5 years recently since you've been starting. Did you start breeding straight away, or did you have one or two to start with?
Brought everything in young because we wanted to get to know the species and do our research and everything. So it was about this will be the third season.
Okay, and when you bought them as hatchlings, was the plan always to breed, or did you buy a couple as pets and then it just sort of escalated like it does for some people?
Yeah, originally it was just a pet, and then, oh my God, I want that white snake. And then it just blew up.
Yep.
We ended up with loads.
And then you find world of ball pythons and see like the 7,500 different morphs and goes from there, doesn't it? It snowballs very quickly. That's great. So this is your third season breeding. So you guys have had some amazing results in the last couple of years. So I was looking back through your Instagram earlier today, and there are some incredible snakes on there, especially a few in the season just gone by, as you guys well know. I'm going to go into your Instagram in a little bit and we'll have a look at a couple of them. But over the last couple of years that you've been breeding, what would you say your highlights are?
Highlights are definitely... definitely, I think my highlight is just getting that hatchling and seeing it take its first meal independently and going, oh my God, a life created, it's eating, it's potentially going to do well now, it's going to go on, it's going to live a healthy life.
It's definitely very sort of a weight off your shoulders when they take their first meal by themselves.
Yeah, but I
love the whole bit of it, like the egg cutting, the whole, like, seeing them pip or if you're cutting them or whatever. It's just an incredible experience, isn't it?
The only annoying thing is the waiting.
Yeah, so much waiting. You just, I feel like you're constantly waiting and always a bit rushed at the same time. So, like, I'm pairing snakes, but I'm waiting for ovulations, and I've got ovulations, but I'm waiting for eggs, and I've got eggs, but we're waiting in the incubator. It's just one thing after another all the time.
You can lose track if you don't stay on top of it. That's for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely. I lose track, and I've only got 10 adult females that are breeding this year, and I still have to like put track tags on them, or just so I know what's going on. And even then, I have to refer back to my notes and go, "What am I doing today? It's Tuesday. What's going on?" Oh dear. So obviously, yeah, like I said, absolutely fantastic years you've had in the last couple of years, and you're condensing your collection a bit so you can focus more on the specific. So, is there anything you're chasing this season or for the next couple of years? Let's focus on this season first. So what pairings have you got? What are you hoping to hit?
I say the males and I say which females he's seen. Yeah, yeah. So at Ultramel Mal, he's Posset Pied. He's seen a Leopard Lesser female. He's also seen a Spot-Nosed Black Phantom Pastel female.
Nice.
And seen a Bongo Lesser.
Okay.
The Leopard Lesser has now gone off food. We think she's had a pre-ovulation shed.
Yep.
Fingers crossed. The DG male is Hexantic. He's seen the Butter Clown Post Blade female.
Is that the DG boy that I've seen that is just like the most ridiculously clean snake in the whole world?
I'm not saying it just because he's ours, but I've never seen a DG.
Let me see if I can find him. Hang on a second. How do I do this? Let's go. So I'll see if I can find him. So whilst you, I'm finding this, he's seeing
the blackhead entry to OD entry Mojave Clown.
Yeah, she's seen he's also seen the leopard female, so that would be some leopard OD Enchi Mojave combos at a Hex.
Hex clowns, yeah.
Nice. We've got the lavender male seeing a fire Enchi yellow belly Mojave female.
Nice. And
a black pastel GHI Mojave female.
Nice. If I go past it, just shout. Is it that one there? I can't remember.
No, that's not him. We've got two pied females. One seeing by Mojave Het Pied Male, and one seeing Enchi Special Male.
That is in there, but is that in there?
Yeah, that's him there, Ben, in the middle, on the arm.
Oh, that one.
That one, yeah.
Yeah, so he is just ridiculously clean.
Yeah, he is. He's just crazy.
I've seen him in the flesh as well, and he almost looks like he's been like cuddled in or like photoshopped, but in real life.
Yeah, his head doesn't look real.
No, it doesn't at all. He is such a nice example. I think you guys have absolutely smashed it. Did you produce him? Where did you get him from if you didn't?
We got him from Gavin.
That explains the quality, doesn't it?
Yeah.
His line's amazing, it really is.
Yeah. Whilst I'm deep diving through your Instagram, let's talk about this.
The one you tried to steal.
I would have put her in my pocket and left your house and you would have never known.
She's
unreal.
No right to be here, if we're honest.
Yeah, so why tell us the story behind that.
So we had, which everyone did last season, had a bit of a car crash season. Incubation, we had an incubator. It worked perfectly fine the first season. The second season, everything in it didn't get through, or it got through and didn't make it out the egg. She was put into another incubator.
Halfway through the season or after she'd pipped?
No, it was one we made, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You made a second one and that clutch went straight into this one because you were having no luck with the first incubator.
Started off sticking them in a new one that we personally built. The whole clutch come through, they were fine, healthy, apart from her.
Yep.
She wasn't crawling out and she started to not like move much. When I had a closer look, she had the cord wrapped round, which is quite common.
Yeah.
Pulled her out and tied her off because there was no way of getting her off it.
Yeah. Well, that the first time you'd ever had to deal with like a wrapped cord?
It was the first season we had one.
Oh, okay. So in a way, it's lucky and unlucky, but you did have a bit of experience with sort of what to do already. Because obviously some people do a few seasons. It's going to happen at some point, but it's quite handy that you had already experienced it once. So like with a girl like this, not that they'd any like their lives are less or more important, but at least you knew exactly what you were going to do.
Yeah, the scary thing was with her is she was lifeless as well.
Yeah.
So it was the decision of, do I cut her or is it like, is she just done now?
Yeah.
But looking at her, I was like, no, I have to.
Yeah.
I cut her, I put her on some wet paper towel, warmed her up, and she was lifeless for, I'm not going to lie, for easily a week after she come out. Barely moving, barely doing anything.
Yeah, just like showing very subtle signs of life.
Yeah, yeah. And we were actually waiting for her to just pass. Opened the tub and she would have rolled over. I assisted her the next day because I could see how weak she was.
And what did you assist her with? Just like a mouse pinky, like the smallest meal you could find?
It was literally a tiny little multi-pup, the tiniest one, just to get something in her system to try and perk her up. It did perk her up, but not as much as we wanted. So 3 days later we gave her another one and she just turned around like nothing. She took 4 weeks to shed out the egg skin.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's a really long time, isn't it?
Yeah. And when she shed, we were like, oh my God, what is this?
Yeah. Like, I still think, away. Oh my God, what is this now when I'm looking at it now?
But when she first shed, she didn't have all the black on the sides. She was just grey with a black head.
Yeah.
And
every time you pop a picture up, she changes colour. It's mad.
Crazy. But she now, you can't even open the tub without her trying to eat you now. So she has no right to be here, but she's definitely thriving now. She's
making up for that now. And she's just absolutely stunning. Have you got an ID on her yet, or is it still a sort of guest ID?
We've asked many people, and from personally what I've created, like and bred, I can see, you can see the blackhead, you can see Mojave and the Enchi, and the only one I was questioning was GHI, but if you look at her...
I was going to say, is there GHI in there?
Yeah, that's the only one I was questioning. But if you look at her, you can see.
Yeah.
She
is just absolutely... I mean, if you hit another one, don't even... Just send her straight to me and I'll send you however much money you want.
The joke is, I did put the whole clutch up for sale.
They were nearly sold her.
And I contacted a couple of people and said, oh, I think I contacted you. I said, oh, these are what are going to be available. And then I was sitting there and thinking about it. I was like, what am I doing?
Yeah, I think you did send me a message and I wish I'd snapped her up before you had a chance to change your mind.
And I just can't believe her now. I mean, she's even changed from that picture. She's just, every day you open the tub, she looks different.
That's quite exciting, though, isn't it? I like things like that. Like, all of mine, I'm really chuffed with my collection at the moment, but I would say, for the most part, a couple of them are still like quite young, so they're getting brighter, but quite a lot of them are now adult and they're sort of, they've peaked. They're not starting to brown out yet, but they're not getting any prettier when I open the tubs.
Yeah. I'd like to see what she looks at Faz and Grams.
Yeah, definitely. I think she is going to be one that will just keep getting better as she gets older. Maybe even worth slipping some Desert Ghost in there later on down the line.
Yeah, definitely.
Or some Sunset or something.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea. So, yeah, talking of down the line, obviously we've sort of covered this year, but what are your plans for the next, say, the next 5 years? Not like exact genetics, but where would you like to be? And then maybe even then the next 10 years, where are you hoping to be with the snake keeping?
There was one recessive that Chris has been going on about since we started, and that was Sunset. I was told that I said I don't like it.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, I think it's definitely a bit of a Marmite Sunset.
Until I see the Ultra Sun.
Oh, to be honest, I haven't seen it. I need to have a look.
Honestly, it's so nice. And then I said to him, we can get it. And we picked up 1.1 pets. So the male's ready now, but obviously I'd rather him have longer to be ready.
Yeah.
And I've put on hold a nice female for him, which we will reveal once she's here. But
don't spoil anything yet.
Chris is going to be really heavy in the ultrasound project. We're going to be working the DG Exantic Clown project. Obviously ultramel, everything. I want to get some blackhead and clown stuff into that.
Oh, wow, the Sunset Ultramel is stunning.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Because
before I was like, nah, I don't really see much. But could you imagine, tied to that, how red it will go?
Yeah, that's, that'll be like a proper red snake, like completely red.
Well, hopefully.
Fingers crossed. You never know. Like, you could put it in there and all of a sudden it'll be part of the Bell Complex and you get a white snake.
Yeah.
That's cool. So lots of sort of double recessive stuff happening in the next few years for you guys then, hopefully, if everything goes to plan. No, that's really good. So in the next sort of 5-10 years, do you still want to be keeping this at a hobby level? Do you want to have expanded so you've got like a snake room or even a facility, or are you happy being a home breeder with your 40-50 snakes and just sort of updating the collection every sort of year or so?
Personally, I will always see it as hobby because it's, I don't want to take the enjoyment out of it.
If your hobby becomes your job, then you'd lose the fun.
I don't, get me wrong, I'd love to have it allocated to its own room or own unit, but personally right now I think it's just being kept on the hobby level. And I like to keep them close. I like to get up in the morning and check everyone straight away before my coffee. And
I have to say I think the same. Like, I've looked at the cost of like renting a unit, but I don't, like, I get up in the morning and check all the snakes, and I get home from work and I check all the snakes. And I think if I had to get up in the morning and drive somewhere before work and then check the snakes and then drive somewhere and then go home, I think it would become a bit of a chore, and it wouldn't be nearly as fun.
And then when you're sitting at home and you're bored, you can, do you know what I mean? You go pull out a snake and be like, oh.
Yeah, I think I'd miss a lot more if they weren't like at home as well. Maybe like having like a building at the bottom of the garden, if my garden was big enough, but because that's still pretty close. But I don't think I'd want to have to, like, a driving distance anywhere. I don't think it would work for me personally.
And you've got to know them as well. I mean, we know that there's some snakes we can't pull out all the time.
Yeah.
Like, for stress levels, or they're just not nice.
Yeah. Like, some of them will touch and then they won't eat for a month.
Yeah. The Hurricane Freeway male, he's a psychopath. You cannot get that animal. I got him out the other day for a picture, but I think I must have just woke him up because he was a bit mellow. You can't get near him. You have to get from the end of the tub.
Yeah.
Even when you're going to get the water, it's like you have to count yourself down. 1, 2, 3, grab, done.
So, yeah, they like that sometimes. But I quite often find the feisty ones are normally really good eaters as well.
He's always waiting. He's terrible.
That's good. Like, is that one where like he's eaten and then you go back and open the tub and he's there waiting for the next one, even though he's not getting anything else?
Yeah.
I've got a couple like that myself, and especially some of the girls at the moment, they're so big. I got with the new rack, they're sort of at face height, and I have to open the tubs like,
oh,
yeah, with a hook from like 6 feet away because they come flying out at the moment.
Well, Chris is funny. I used to feed the big breeding females until I was chased across the floor by one, and I said, that's your job. But he's had a couple this season. He's pulled the drawer open and the whole animal's come flying out.
Yeah.
He's had to dodge it, and it's like, all right, get back in your tub. But they are a different animal during breeding season because our female is quite mellow.
Yeah.
Breeding season comes and that's not the same animal.
No, I completely agree. As soon as they start, like, once they've met them, the boy for the first time, or they're like cool side seeking and they're starting to build, like the whole attitude changes. Like you open the tub and they're there straight away looking at you like, where's the food or who am I going to bite?
Up and you're like, okay.
Yeah. And just close it slowly and walk away.
Yeah.
So in regards, obviously you've got 40 snakes in your house. So how are you keeping them? I presume we're talking racks.
Yeah. Well, now it's racks. When we first got into it, we did the whole bib thing.
Yep.
Spent hundreds and thousands. It personally for us, it didn't work.
Yeah.
They were just too. It worked for some. Some of the confident snakes we had, they were fine. Yeah. But there wasn't, and it was they'd miss 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And I find a male ball python does so much better in a smaller space.
Yeah.
Well, I have to agree. I find, again, I've done exactly the same. So I've had Roars and Vivs. Unfortunately, because I'm in quite a small house, not unfortunately, I've got a roof over my head, but, you know, it's smaller than it could be. It's quite high traffic wherever the Vivs are. So having that glass front and they're open all the time, even with, like, a lot of, like, fake plants, real plants, whatever, hides, they're always getting disturbed. I find with the racks, even though it's in a high traffic area, because they've only got like the small, like I'm using tinted tubs, they don't get disturbed nearly as much.
They don't. I find as well, a lot of them have to feel themselves on the sides of the tub.
Yeah.
To know I'm secure.
Yeah.
Right in, I don't have to go from one corner to the other and be like, which one's safer?
Yeah.
They can feel themselves there and that. The feeding response from changing from Vivs to racks and the size of the tub is very important to the snake.
Yeah, I agree.
Will do well in a tub that another animal that size will do well.
Yeah, exactly. So I've got a couple of males that are in like a 33 litre that's been split in half. They're both the boys are like, I don't know, 800 grams-ish.
Yeah.
And then I've got another boy that's just over 1,000. He's not, like, visually, he's not much bigger, but he won't eat if he's in that small, like, the side. He is in a full-size thing, but he's got five hides in there. You can't even see the floor because there's so much clutter, but he seems to like that. And you open it, and he'll be sat between two hides. Like, he's not in them, but he's touching them, and he feels secure. But then he doesn't like it if he's in a small space with no hides, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. That's why it's so important to know the animal, because we do get some inboxes on like my male stopped eating and stuff like that, and
a lot
of people will just turn around and say, oh, it's breeding season.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, yeah, it is, but a lot of the time it's down to that animal's confidence and the way it feels.
Yeah. And sometimes it even comes down when to feed it to things like the time of day you're feeding or how much light's in the room. Like, all of my, I used to feed like just whenever I got a chance in the day, but now I will feed them like late evening, so I probably won't feed them before 8 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah,
because I find it gives them all a chance to sort of wake up a bit. They're around in the, like, moving around in the tubs, whereas if you're doing it in the middle of the day, you're sort of pulling them out of bed, waking them up, and waggling a dead thing in their face, and they're like, I don't want to eat.
They're different animals at night. If you walk in, they're kept overnight. They are all up, all moving around, all doing their own thing. During the day, you wouldn't even know they're in the room. It's totally different.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. So you're in racks, and substrate wise, I know there's quite a lot of there's not a right or wrong way to do it. Some people are using printed newspaper, some people are using those perforated paper things, I don't know what they're called. You've got Lignocell, well, Rex chip, Viper bedding, all the coconut husk. So what are you guys using? What do you find works best for you guys?
We've
just slip that in there.
Yeah. But I have to say, Viper bedding, you have to go get.
I would agree.
It's been the best, yeah, for sure.
We compared it to the, I think it was a Reptichip, and there isn't much of a difference between them, but Viper is that little bit more, how do I put it? Reptichip, I find, has more hard, sharp bits in.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean, like the bigger, sort of rougher chunks.
Yeah. It's cushioned. It sounds weird, but it's more cushioned, and
yeah, it sort of gives a bit better.
And I just think it's fantastic, especially the hatchling block for the breeder females.
Yeah, definitely.
I couldn't.
So using the hatchling stuff for the adult girls.
Yeah, for the breeder females, we use the hatchling. We find they burrow better with it. They make their. But the others, you can mix both together.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've seen a few people mixing the hatchling and the breeder blocks together, and it looks like quite a good mix. I'm only using the breeder stuff at the moment.
I mean, for the anything under about 300 grams, we just leave on the hatchling anyway.
Yeah.
But everything else is mixed. Like, the difference in it, it holds humidity perfect, everything.
Yeah, I find that as well. It seems to absorb, not that I want the smell to stay in the tub, but like, obviously I've got things in quarantine at the moment, and I haven't had anything in quarantine for a while. And they're all on like paper towel at the moment.
The smell.
It's ridiculous. Like, I forgot how much it smells. And like, you open the tub like of the snake here, and they've done a massive poo, and it's like the freshest poo ever, but it's on like a coconut. I'm using Viper at the moment, so it's on Viper bedding. You open it, like, obviously it smells a little bit because it's poo, but you then open the tub next to it, which has got like a little bit of wee in it, but it's on paper towel, and it stinks.
Yeah, it smells like rotting in there.
Yeah, but, it's mad how much it can absorb it, and it's so, because obviously the paper towel, if they weed on it, I've got to take the tub out, clean the whole tub out, F10 the whole thing, and then do it, whereas like the Viper or any other loose substrate, it's a lot easier. You can chuck a glove on or grab like a dog poo bag, scoop up that big chunk with all the loose stuff around it, and then just throw it in the bin and just top it up as you need to. And then I change it out probably every 6 weeks.
Well, we actually wanted to see how much it would stretch before it started to smell a bit. So we actually managed to keep ours, what was it, about 8 weeks.
8 weeks, yeah.
And it didn't even get to the stage where it was, oh my god, it stinks, or it was mucky or anything like that. It was just right, it's been long enough now.
Fresh
change. It was just more, I wanted to do it than it needed to be done.
Yeah, no, I do exactly the same. So I spot clean mine, obviously I check them every day. If there's a poo, it comes straight out. On Saturday mornings I'll go through and like all the, like, the, if they've shed, then you get the loose bit of shed. I'll go through and pick out all the little bits that have been missed during the week. And then if I need to top it up, I will. And then every 6 weeks or so, it gets completely changed. If I was using like Lignocell or like paper towel, you have to change like 3 times a week. But like Lignocell, I find it needs to be changed a lot more. And it's not from like a lazy keeper point of view. I like to keep it in there, so. Because obviously they're comfortable and they know the smells. And I find, especially the girls, they seem to make like their little, almost like burrow down. And there's like their little imprint. It's like that butt print on your sofa. Like, that's where I sit. And I don't want to go in there every like couple of weeks. And I'm sure some people do, and I'm sure it's fine. But I feel, especially with the breeding time of year, I don't want to go in and disturb them loads, because I want them just to be comfortable and focus on what they need to do.
We don't mess with our breeding females during breeding season.
Yeah.
The less we can do, the better. But every so often, we will need to go in and we will just take out the back portion.
Yep.
And move the bit from the front to the back, so their scent and everything's still there.
Yeah, yeah.
Pop up the front section. Because I find with the females, you could clean them out fully. They're going to go back. They're going to scent everywhere.
Yeah.
Make their little burrow again. It's just
yeah.
They have to feel comfortable to do what they're doing, obviously. And if they're not happy, they're not going to breed. They're not going to produce.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I find that once I've changed it, and I do a water change on Wednesdays and Saturdays, and top it up if or clean it if it's filthy. But every Wednesday and Saturday, they get cleaned regardless of the state of the bowls. And I find as soon as there's fresh water in there, especially this time of year, because I've got quite a lot of girls that are building, they get in the water bowls and it goes over anyway.
Yeah. Or you put the clean bowl in and you go to get the water, even though they've had water.
Yeah.
And they're waiting for you to put that clean water in.
Yeah, well, they filled it up with RepChip already, or they filled it up with bedding already.
Yeah, it's always in the water.
Always in the water, and it's always on the floor as well. I just spend my whole life changing water bowls and sweeping the floor.
Yeah.
But it's all good. It's part of the fun, isn't it? Sorry.
The Lingercell. It's like...
everywhere.
You breathe too hard on it, and it's everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, and you go to work and it's in your pockets and it's like in your car and it's just, oh yeah, nightmare. I don't like it. I used it for corn snakes a long time ago. And I just remember, yeah, like you say, it gets everywhere.
It's just very messy.
Yeah, a lot of people do use it. But I find, me personally, like the coconut bedding, whether it's Viper bedding, RepTiChip, Hurtpask, whatever, that for me, in the environment, I don't know if the house makes a difference, like the rooms or whatever, but that seems to hold the humidity the best for me. I've got no issues shedding. There's no issues with mold or anything like that, so I'm happy with what it is.
Yeah.
So going back sort of onto your breeding a bit, your incubator, you said that you had an incubator that was a bit crap, so we won't mention where it came from, doesn't matter. But you've moved on to a homemade one, so how have you made it? What is it? Are we talking fridge, Viv? What heating? What are you using?
The one we've used, it's a drink cooler. So we took out most of the shelves. I think we left three in. We didn't tinker with the fridge or anything. It's perfectly working.
Yeah.
We just turned it off.
Yeah.
Some fridges you can just like turn it completely off, so it doesn't... Yep. cool down and it's not doing anything, and that way we can still use the light that's in there.
Oh yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, we use heat cable. I find that works better.
Yep.
I just find it holds the heat longer than a heat mat, if that makes
sense. Yeah, mine's a converted fridge and I've got heat cable in mine. And I ran the heat cable all the way around, like on the sides, the bottom and the top. And then I've got the fans to circulate it as well.
I just did ours on the back. Like, yep. But there's also, we put in a fan, a USB, but it's a fan. So it blows, it keeps it all level. Yeah, and
it keeps it stable.
We've only got maybe a 1 degree difference on from top to bottom, sort of.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and you're using, what sort of stat are you using?
We use what's the name of that stat? There's one down there. Well, we use a stat. We got it off of Amazon, and
the Inkbird. Is it Inkbird stats?
Yeah,
I think it is that one.
Yeah. And I use that temporarily, and then I can upgrade it. But to be honest, I haven't had to change it. It's been so good.
Yeah, so I've got on one of my racks, I've got Haberstadt stats, pulse stats. And on the racks I bought from you guys, I put Inkbird thermostat on it. And to be honest, I'm more impressed with the 30 quid Inkbird one than I am the Haberstadt ones. I've had the Haberstadt ones fail a few times as well, whereas this one is spot on.
I think it's because the probe's a lot smaller. So when that starts to differ a little bit, it comes on a lot quicker.
Well, I like the adjustment on it as well, because you can set it to, obviously, like, so mine is set to like 32 degrees, but then I can tell it, oh, it's dropped half a degree, come on, or it's gone half a degree, I'm going to turn it off. Whereas the Haberstadt ones, they vary like 2 degrees up and down before they start turning on and off.
Yeah, see, that's what I found. And also with these, you can change it, because with the incubators, we use Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
set out degrees.
To be fair, I use Fahrenheit in my incubator, but I use Celsius on the racks.
Same. It is. It sounds silly, but that's the way we do it.
Yeah.
For some reason, the Fahrenheit, setting it on your incubator to the Fahrenheit is so much, I found it's more accurate.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So what temp are you incubating your eggs at? What's the stat set to? Because obviously there's a bit of fluctuation.
The stat setting is 89 Fahrenheit. And inside it gets to 88 to 88.5.
Okay, and what sort of how long are your eggs roughly taking to pip? So probably what, 54, 56 days?
Yeah, no, it's about 55, 56.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just curious. Because some people, obviously, I'm mindset about 87 and a half. So my eggs don't tend to pip until like day 57 to pushing on 60 sometimes. So it's that little bit cooler.
Yeah.
But yeah. I suppose it's whatever people want to do, really. And I know people can cook them. You can cook them really slow at like sort of 84, 85. Or I know some people, it's not so much now, you can do like 90 to 91 and they're pipping on like day 49, 50.
Cooler than what it is to cook them that little bit. If you, do you know what I mean? I think it's safer to let them take a couple more days to cook than to...
Oh, I would agree. It's like putting a meat joint in your slow cooker, isn't it? You want it to sort of slowly cook and it'd be really nice instead of chucking it in the oven and burning it.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, so, oh, cool. Where are we up to? Just looking at my notes because I'm trying to remember. There's so many things to remember I have to ask about. So I think that's pretty much summed up where you guys are at the moment in your, let's call it breeding career, snake reptile keeping career. Do you have, or I don't know how to phrase it, sort of what inspirations or inspirational people or Instagram accounts or wherever, where are you looking, like when you're scrolling, you got 20 minutes, are you on YouTube watching people, are you listening to podcasts, what are you doing?
I mean, main person that we like to watch and get advice and stuff from is Gavin. I mean, yeah. Huge support for us as well as everyone else on his Patreon, and even people that aren't on his Patreon, he's just an amazing person.
Yeah, so I'm not on his Patreon, but a few times I've like had to message him for ID helps, or I've watched on some of his YouTube videos, and he is just such a nice bloke.
He will never turn anyone away. I don't have a bad word to say about him. Like he just gives and gives and gives.
No, that's brilliant. And is there anybody you want to give a shout out to before we sort of start to wrap this up? Mm. Obviously, it doesn't matter if there isn't. You can just go, no, we're well happy.
It's hard to choose just one, really.
Yeah, it is. And it's hard to think on the spot as well. I should have given you a heads up.
Yeah. I mean, Snake Cut.
Yep.
And I know they're an amazing couple and they're very supportive.
They were on a podcast I listened to recently, and I started following them, and it looks like their snake room is incredible.
Yeah, and they're really nice people. I mean, from what we've seen on all their stuff, they're really genuine, and it's just nice to have new people come in and be on. Do you know what I mean? Like just be on the same wavelength.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think especially because the hobby seems to be quite a lot based around Instagram.
Yeah.
Like I find you get those top tier people, like they've got 10,000-15,000 followers, everybody knows who they are, but then you've got there's like, I don't know, a handful of those people, and then you get like the guys that have got, I don't know, 500 to 1,000 followers, and there's hundreds of them, and some of them like I've never heard of, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh my god, why aren't I following this person?
Yeah,
so nice.
There's so many people, and I think especially this way. But I've got a Discord as well, but like the podcast, it would help reach more people, and hopefully like I'll gain some followers, and you guys are going to gain some followers, and we'll all sort of meet more people, and we can all grow as a community.
Yeah, I think as well, there used to be a lot of the fear of, oh, I don't want to ask that question, or I don't want to feel like I'm nagging someone, like,
to ask
advice and stuff, but there is so many good people in the community, and like even us, we always answer anyone's questions and try them the best we can. We don't know everything, but if we know someone that can help them and we can't, then we're pointing
in the right direction.
I think there's, it is slowly becoming, there's more people like that.
And yeah, that's, I would agree. It used to be very much, oh, I know the information, I'm not going to share it. But it does seem to be people are a lot more open to helping each other now. Like, obviously, you guys are in the Discord that I made. And I made that not to get at people that started Patreons, because fair play to them. If I had that sort of following, I'd do exactly the same thing. But I created the Discord for like the little WhatsApp group. So there's like 15 people in that one or 10 people in that one. And they're, like you say, they're too afraid to ask a question. So I made the Discord going, come in. It doesn't matter what the question is. There's no stupid questions. Like, you might get a stupid answer from someone, but we're all here to help. It doesn't matter what the issue is. We all want to help you. I think it's, although it's small, it's growing really nicely, and the group of people there are really nice.
Also, I think it's good to get more than one person's opinion.
No, definitely, yeah.
When you're in like a Discord or you're in a group like that, you can say, especially with the IDing.
Yeah.
You can get one person's opinion and another one's, and you never know, like someone's, you could get a couple people agree on one thing and someone else be like, oh, actually, no, they are right. No, I mean, it's hard to tell just from pictures. When people ask for ID and stuff like that, if you don't know the backgrounds, it's very difficult to say, oh, that's what it is.
Yeah, definitely. No, I completely agree. And sometimes some people have got their, like, the specific eye for it. Like, some things that I go, well, I couldn't tell you what that is. And then there's other genes where I'm like, yeah, that's definitely that. I'm 100% sure.
It's like leopards. That I think leopard's one of the easiest genes.
Yeah, I can't see leopard. I really struggle with it. Unless it's an amazing example. I'm like, no, not a clue.
That's what Chris says. He can't ID leopard. But what it is, I think it's because it was my first, and it was one of, I absolutely love leopard. So now it's just like, oh my God, that's leopard. Oh my God, that's leopard.
Yeah. The way it's going at the moment, most things are leopard anyway. If it's not got leopard in it, it's got GHI or Enchi.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, right. So I think we're going to wrap it up. There's two more questions I have to ask you, which is the way I'm going to finish every podcast. So it's something I like to call Hall of Fame or Hall of Shame. So what I want you to do is we'll start with the Hall of Shame and we'll finish on Hall of Fame, something a little bit positive for the end of the podcast. So Hall of Shame, basically you guys just need to tell me one thing each that from reptile keeping as a whole, it doesn't need to be an item, it can be like advice, a morph, some like old method of keeping, anything that you don't like that you want to put in the Hall of Shame so nobody ever has to deal with it ever again.
Oh.
Yeah, I know.
He likes to put you on the spot, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's the first episode, so someone's got to get put on the spot. So the next people that go on, they'll have listened and be like, oh, I'll think about that.
Yeah. Right, so something that you wouldn't.
So I'll tell you what, I'll start off to give you guys a bit of help. So something that I would put in the Hall of Shame that you don't really see very often anymore, but it used to be really popular, are heat rocks. Like the rocks that you can just put in your viv and your animal go and sit on it. They're plugged into the wall and then all of a sudden you've got a slow roasted bearded dragon.
Yeah.
They're going straight in my Hall of Shame.
Yeah. Do you know what? I don't. I've seen a couple of people and I've heard of a couple of people having to break them open and stuff. Are the cave hives? They're meant for lizards.
The magnet ones?
They just slide on top.
Yes, I know the ones, yeah.
And personally, I think they're more meant for lizards. But a couple of people, obviously, they're just getting into it. They go, oh, that's a nice hive. They take it home. They put their corn snake or their ball python in it. And it gets stuck in the and it can't get out.
Okay, so we're chucking cave hives for snakes. Got in the Hall of Shame. I'm going to make a nice little animation for this at some point.
I get a dome or get the rock ones or even use celebration boxes, the plastic ones, cut out.
All of mine are full of celebration boxes. Honestly, if someone come and looked, they'd go, bloody hell, you've got so... How are you not the size of a house? That's so much chocolate.
Yep.
Chris, what were you putting in the Hall of Shame?
It's hard, isn't it?
Very hard.
It doesn't have to be an item either. It can be like a bit of advice you've heard in the past or, I don't know, drama that happened eventually. Like, I don't know.
It's certain types of water bowls. Used to have like rocky ones, you know, the triangle ones. And for me, you've either got a plastic or a china bowl.
Oh, he means, so we used to buy these heavy, they're quite common in like pet shops and reptile shops that sell things. And we find that, now we change our waters every 3 days.
Yeah.
Or whenever, like, sometimes it's even more. Say that they get it dirty, it would be changed.
Yeah.
You'd have to change daily. Okay. They would be like a slime.
Ooh.
And like you'd tip the water out and then you'd go to wipe it and you could feel it.
Yeah.
And
well, yeah, I've used a couple of those. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, they're nasty.
Disgusting. And after a couple of weeks, I said, no, we just threw them all out and just got the ceramic dog bowls.
Yeah, that's what I use, a ceramic dog bowl. So Chris's, the weird plastic triangle water bowls, that's what we're going to call them. They're going in the Hall of Shame as well. Right, so to finish off, Hall of Fame, either it can be a piece of advice you'd like to give someone, it can be a morph, it can be just something you like in the reptile hobby. Let's go, Chris, you can go first this time. What is going in the Hall of Fame for you?
Simple. Respect everyone and stay humble.
Yeah, perfect.
That's what I say to everyone, just be nice to everyone.
Yeah, treat people as if you want to be treated.
Yeah. Also, remember, it doesn't matter how much experience or how much you've researched, there's always more to learn. Everything's always expanding. There's always new research. You never know everything. So if someone is trying to give you some advice, it's not that you have to take it, but just listen.
Listen.
Yeah. To what
you're
bored, because a lot of people go, oh, who are they to say that? Like, but if you actually listen, you never know. Down the line, you say, oh, why is that happening? And then think, oh, they said to try this. And it's not that people are telling you what to do or advising you wrong, but no one knows everything.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Research that's still being done. Look at the genetic thing now. We never used to have that. So much being uncovered. So no one knows everything, but just research all the time. Keep on top of everything.
No, I don't think you guys could have said that any better, to be honest. So, yeah, that's us done. That is the podcast. So thank you very much for coming along. I'm going to kick you guys out in a second and just do a little outro. And I'm sure I will talk to you guys soon. But I think for episode one, I think that went pretty well. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you. Speak to you soon.
Yep.
Cool. So there we go. Thank you very much, everybody. That was episode one of the RepTiChat podcast. I don't know how frequently these are going to be yet, so probably once a month, but it might be a little bit more than that. If you enjoyed it, please go in the description on the YouTube video, or if you're an audio listener listening on Spotify, Apple, wherever you're listening to your podcast, there should be a link in the description for my personal Instagram, the podcast Instagram, and our guests, who are obviously were Kay and Chris today. So all the links should be in there. Go and give us a follow. And until next time, thank you very much. This has been the RepTiChat podcast. Goodbye.